Our city, our country, our world. Cleveland's Morning News with Wills and Snyder on News Radio WTAM 1100.
It is the top trending holiday deal. Matt Granite, Channel 3's Morning News. Wills' ways to save is in. WTAM.com, keyword save. I told you when I saw this video, you want to be a kid again after you see this. This is cool.
I know.
Forget the Legos.
Yeah, it better than Lego. Okay, so here's the thing about Lego, and I grew up with Lego, obviously, we all did.
Sure.
It's hugely popular.
Yeah.
This is actually, in terms of popularity right now, more so than Lego, especially with people making the purchases, because as we know, each Lego set, so whatever it is you're designing, has its own age restriction.
Right.
It's all over the place. So one Lego set is ages 3 to 9. Mm. The other is 9 to 14. Mm.
And some 1834.
Yeah, exactly. That's my age range. I love it. The reason magnetic and the magnetiles are a little bit more popular is they're as captivating to a 3-year-old as they are a 33-year-old. They allow the builder to construct things with no confines. There is nothing restricting how high, how big, or your imagination, where, at least for Lego, a lot of the time, you sort of have to play by the book to build something that fits together.
Now, if you're a parent, you got a kid, you've been shopping for these things, maybe you've heard about them, you've seen them. There are some ripoffs out there. I mean, this is good quality, though, the set you found.
Yeah, with the magnetiles, there's a lot of knockoffs. There's a lot of ones made overseas that just don't have any of the safety regulations. And more importantly, the pieces are weak. So as a son, daughter, niece, nephew, or grandchild is building, it's not going to go as high. I'd say a few of the sets that we tested just kind of fell apart.
Yeah.
So what is this? I mean, I'm sure all parents and family members know exactly what I'm talking about. But if this is new to you, most parents by this point know what magnetiles are. But let alone finding them in stock versus even finding them on sale is not as much of a phenomenon this holiday season. What I found today allows your son, daughter, or family member to go as big as he or she wants. You can construct vehicles, castles. They're absolutely beautiful, colored, infinite shapes that they can make. And you get a 100-piece set, including all the vehicle apparatus and other things, down from about $80 typically to under 50 today with free delivery.
Wow. Be creative. The kids can build in 3D. I mean, just get everybody together around the tree on Christmas morning when you open this thing.
Yes.
It's a fun gift.
You can even build a tree with this.
Oh, perfect. Matt Granite, Channel 3's Morning News. Will's Ways to Save. He has found the deal, played with the deal, and posted the deal for you at WTAM.com. Keyword save. Back in the morning, and we're going to keep Christmas shopping on a budget. Some good stuff under $30. Watch him on 3 back here same time in the morning. Thanks, Granite.
Awesome.
Now you get Mike Snyder Sports mornings, 15 and 45 on News Radio WTAM 1100. And let's talk about this Cavs team. Boy, they're streaking nicely right now.
Well, they are, Bill. And you know, the thing is, they've got several notches to go. It's not like they are red hot. In fact, last night they played to the level of their opposition. They were down by 14 to the Kings at home early third quarter. They whittled that down to a 5-point deficit to begin the fourth quarter when Kyle Korver pushed them into the lead with 3 consecutive threes. Still late in the game, they were down 2 with 2.5 minutes to go. The Cavs would shut out Sacramento the rest of the way, and LeBron would do his thing.
Lob to LeBron. He's at the right point. He works on Samson. Step back three. He nails it. Timeout Sacramento is with 15 seconds remaining. LeBron James has given the Cavaliers a 195 lead.
And the Cavs would win at 101-95 when I say LeBron doing his thing. How about three-point shooting? His line last night, 32 points, 11 rebounds, and 9 assists. The Cavs win a franchise record 13 wins in a row, record-tying 13 wins in a row. LeBron's shooting percentage is off the charts right now. Throughout his career, he's a 34% three-point shooter. This year, he's at 43%.
You know, shooting the ball is what this league is, you know, kind of turned into. So, you know, for me to continue to improve, that's what I wanted to do. I put a lot of work into my offseason training, and I just try to implement it into, you know, to the season once it gets here.
He works hard every offseason. Whatever deficit he sees in his game, he works to overcome it, and he has done it with his shot this year. Kevin Love supported him with 18. Jeff Green had 17. The Cavs will seek the franchise record at Indiana tomorrow. Also, Tristan Thompson, who's been out for over a month, could return this weekend. Isaiah Thomas scrimmaged yesterday, so he's getting closer, and Derrick Rose is back and working towards his return. All is very good right now for the Cavaliers. Not so good for the other team that's in in season in town. The Browns still looking for win number one. DeShone Kizer not only leads the league in interceptions, he's also at the bottom of the list when it comes to completion percentage, and his coach says that's got to change.
Complete the ball. I mean, again, it goes back to the same thing. Guys got to get open. Guys got to catch it when he throws it, and he's got to put the ball in the right spot, you know, more often than he has, and that's just what it is. So he can do it. I truly believe he can.
Browns and Packers Sunday at 1. Off-criticized Commissioner Roger Goodell must be doing something right. He's received a 5-year contract extension that, with incentives, could be worth up to $200 million. NFL week begins tonight with the Saints in Atlanta to meet the Falcons. And in baseball, the Indians are thinking of fan safety going into the new season at Progressive Field. They will extend the safety netting behind home plate to the ends of both dugouts for the upcoming season. Home of the Indians and the Cavs, Mike Snyder, News Radio, WTAM 1100.
All challenges demand new approaches. Today, we finally acknowledge the obvious, that Jerusalem is Israel's capital. While previous presidents have made this a major campaign promise, they failed to deliver. Today, I am delivering.
And the ripple effects of that announcement playing out around the world, President Trump announcing our country will recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, move our embassy there. Sharon Reed joins me this morning on that and some other stories. Hey, Sharon, good morning. This historic announcement, a lot of concern, though. Other countries not real happy with us. Even a talk of a meeting at the UN in the next couple of days about it.
That's correct. We're expecting it as soon as tomorrow, the meeting at the UN, and that includes several countries, 8 countries at least, that are saying that this needs to be looked at. That includes Britain and France, who are demanding the meeting. So, and you're also beginning to get what I think a lot of people fear, which is the threat of violence being talked about. The leader of Hamas within the last hour or so has been talking about a new intifada, an uprising, saying that the decision to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital is basically killed the Israeli Palestinian peace process. And so they're talking about a day of rage tomorrow that would likely come after prayers. And so I think you're seeing certainly the U.S. embassies around the world kind of boosting security and just a lot of nervous reaction to what the president did announce yesterday.
White House today, a couple of meetings. Democrat leaders will be there trying to get a deal done to avoid a government shutdown.
That's right. You've got until midnight tomorrow night, actually, for the government to not run out of money. And again, we're expecting to see Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer and House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi head to the White House. That's unless the president does any tweeting. Or yesterday he did say a comment that the government shutdown could happen. You'll remember they were invited to the White House about a week ago, and the government and the president tweeted that they didn't want to make a deal, and so that meeting kind of got canceled. We'll see if this one happens today. The House, meantime, is expected to pass what's called a continuing resolution, a 2-week deal that would continue to fund the government through December 22nd, and we're expecting the Senate to pass that as well. But then again, they're going to have to face the problem again on December 22nd, just as the holidays are there and people want to go home from Congress.
Yeah, typical Washington. You need a little deadline, a little drama.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Empty chairs last time. Chuck and Nancy say they'll be there. Meanwhile, at the other end of Pennsylvania Avenue, nobody wants to be seen with Al Franken right now, right?
That's right. Well, he's expected to take the Senate floor this morning to make an announcement. And his office is denying a lot of reporting that says he's resigning. They say he's been, as of last night, meeting with his family and said that any reports of a final decision were inaccurate. But the general assumption is he's about to step down. You've got about 36 senators now who are calling for him to go, including Chuck Schumer, who said he basically issued a statement saying he has a higher obligation to his constituents in the Senate and should step down. You know, the breaking point seems to have been another report. It's a 7th or 8th report. This time a congressional aide said that Franken had tried to kiss her. He's actually come out and denied that specific report and said it's categorically not true. The allegation was that he had said to the woman, "It's my right as an entertainer," something that Franken says is preposterous. He would never say, but it does appear that the tipping point's here and that this may be his last day.
A potpourri of news out of Washington this morning with our Sharon Reed running it down. Sharon, thanks. Have a good day.
Thank you. You too. Take
updates on all those stories, top and bottom of the hour. And, of course, we'll be talking about it on The Spew this morning at 9:05 with Lanigan and Triv. And, boy, Rush Limbaugh. He'll get his take. Following the news at noon today on News Radio, WTAM 1100. Interesting Rush yesterday. Did you listen? He was, boy, he could really paint the picture about these wildfires out in Southern California. Have you seen the video? My goodness. This thing's jumping the, what is it, the 405, Bel Air, Brentwood, one of these rich neighborhoods near Beverly Hills. Entertainment guy Matt Wolf says they're also shutting down some production out there because of these wildfires. Matt?
Yeah, and as a sidebar to that, a new fire, apparently, I'm just reading this now on the wires, has just broken out. So we're really keeping a close eye on this thing. And, of course, you may or may not know our entertainment reporter, Jason Nathanson. He's actually doing duty right now in the fire zone itself. So pretty interesting to see what's going on out there and what's happening. Now, how as it relates to Hollywood... you know, no surprise here. A couple of shows shut down production due to this. Westworld and SWAT. They filmed sort of in the areas near Santa Clarita where the fires are pretty much nearby. And listen, you know, you know just as well as I do, Bill, you can't take chances with anything.
No, not at all.
These fires have a life of their own. I mean, one of them jumped the highway last night and is burning on the other side of the Pacific, you know, for crying out loud. So no chances being taken until further notice with these shows, Westworld and SWAT.
All right. Those shutting down some 90,000 acres so far, and those winds keep kicking up when it comes to spreading them around.
Well, a lot of times when we can't be 100% sure, but when you see that kind of a raid, you're probably looking at some kind of kickback situation or some kind of improper, unethical, or criminal favoritism to some type of entity for a contract. So I would say that those would be the two of the most logical areas to be looking at.
And if I can just connect a couple of dots then, based on what you're telling me, if you've got the Department of Housing and Urban Development, the FBI, and the IRS, it could be the feds are looking into the way some proceeds, some money, some contract was used then.
Yeah, absolutely. How some contract was used, and probably more in-depth, why was a certain entity provided a certain contract or multiple contracts on an ongoing, semi-ongoing basis? It's somewhere in the realm of improper favoritism or improper awarding of contracts, and could be kicked in with that there was some probably some return of favor, could be money or otherwise, to somebody in the City Hall arena.
Tim Dimoff, President CEO of Sachs Consulting Investigative Services, an early take on what played out late last night at Cleveland City Hall. Tim, thanks.
Thank you.
News Radio WTAM 1100. This is Bill Wills. Mark Bona, Cleveland Plain Theater, Cleveland.com, joins me this morning. A couple of beer stories I want to work in. Morning, Mark.
Hey, how are you, Bill?
Good, buddy. On the business side, you posted a story about Rivals and Fatheads with a little transaction on that Sheldon Road tap room. What's that about?
Yeah, this was a big deal. As you know, we've been talking a lot about Fatheads moving out of the Sheldon Road tap room, about a mile and a half away to right off of Bagley Road with visibility, much larger facility, production facility, tap room, restaurant, the whole nine yards, right off of Interstate 71, visibility from the highway. Well, their Sheldon Road tap room is not going to be empty for very long. Rivals Brewing Company, Rivals as in a Rivals Sports Grill, also in Middleburg Heights, has agreed to buy the tap room and facility. And this was a big deal because Rivals has been slowly getting into the beer business. They're moving at a pretty good pace. They contracted with Hop View Brewing out of Madison to make four beers in the Rivals name. They've been doing this since December a year ago. They've just released their fourth one. I've had a couple of these. These are very good beers. The folks at Rivals tell me they are really outselling their other craft handles. I like what they've offered. I was there this week. Great, great options, and love their beer. Now they're going to go whole hog. Chuck Johnson is going to be the brewmaster and director of operations. They're really going to put their imprint on this, and it's good for Middleburg Heights. That space won't be, I hate when I see empty spaces
right.
For a long time. No matter what the industry or business, this isn't going to be empty that long. They're going to put their own footprint in there, and good for Rivals, and congratulations to Fatheads. And I think the two of them are going to, they get along, and they're going to be working pretty well, I think, closely together in coming months.
Interesting niche, too, as you just kind of grow the pie, if you will. If you enjoy beer, I mean, there's another great example of more selection, more places for you then, right?
That's exactly right. This is an industry that keeps growing. In a few weeks, we're going to have my end of the year beer column, and we're going to talk a lot. I'll talk a lot in that column about the growth of the industry in the area.
Mark Bona, Cleveland Plain Dealer, Cleveland.com, with me talking beer, and we got some national recognition you also posted this week, right?
Yeah, I love writing stories about national publications and national websites that mention Ohio beers, Ohio breweries, especially from Northeast Ohio. It doesn't matter to me what the publication is or what the list is. They're very different, but I like to see what locally is garnering national attention. So USA Today was out with a pretty tasty compilation. It's not a ranking. It was of holiday beers, primarily almost three dozen breweries in the country that are offering some very creative and tasty concoctions. And the two from Ohio that made the list are Market Garden Brewery is out with a trio of Festivus Ales. I love the whole theme based on Seinfeld, of course. And we've talked about this when it was released the same time as Christmas Ale at Great Lakes. These are tasty beers. They're big beers. One of them is a Belgian style, I believe, a golden ale. Really doing a nice job. So they're getting lauded by USA Today. And then Rheingeist down in Cincinnati has one out called Dad. And that also is sold locally, so they're getting a little bit of fame, 15 minutes of fame for that as well. But what really interested me on this list is that Great Lakes Christmas Ale did not make the list. Now, again, this is not a ranking. It was not blind judging. It's just a fun list to say what's out there.
Right.
Some of these beers are available locally. Some of them aren't. But I always like pointing out what the local ones are, which local ones are garnering a little bit of attention nationally. So Market Garden and locally in Rheingeist in Cincinnati get a little mention in USA Today.
Good recognition for some beer around here. Mark Bona is at Cleveland Plain Dealer, Cleveland.com. Follow him on Twitter, mbona30, and you can check out more of those stories as well at Cleveland.com. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Bill.
Now let's head out to a restaurant this weekend. News Radio WTAM 1100. This is Bill Wills. Mark Bona, Cleveland Plain Dealer, Cleveland.com joins me. He recently headed out to Pier W, a longtime tradition with a great view in our city. Mark, with a review, the vibe, the location, take us there. What'd you think?
You know, I thought it was excellent. As you know, Bill, I wear a few different hats at Cleveland.com, and one of them is dining news and dining reviews. And my editor had noticed that we really hadn't been back to Pier W in several years. So I headed out there, and just to let you and your listeners know, when we review a restaurant, we go twice, we go anonymously, and if the restaurant is new, we will wait until they get their sea legs, so to speak, mm-hmm. for a couple of months. Now, Pier W has been around since 1965, and there's very good reason for that. They have two things, and you hit upon one that we all know. This is often a special occasion place because the view is phenomenal. You'll be hard-pressed to find a better view in the city. I think it's one of the top two views, along with the restaurant at Bar 32 at the Hilton downtown, which is a beautiful shot of the city. But if you go to Pier W, you have to go out on the top patio. Right now, there's no tables or chairs, but you can walk out there. This is made for selfies and shots. As a matter of fact, my wife and I will, I'm sure we're getting a Christmas card photograph from what we took there. So the view is really reason to go. But I have to tell you, I really appreciate seafood restaurants that really understand that you don't want to gunk up seafood. If you're paying a lot for lobster, you want to taste the lobster, and you don't want overly seasoned things. They really have a deft touch when it comes to their seasonings. They have many, many options in terms of simply prepared versus the other dishes they have. Really had a great time. And you know, as important as the food is, I think it's equally important to note that when you go into a restaurant, you know, you and I may get probably a pretty good chance we're going to get two different dishes.
Right.
We're all going to experience the same vibe. How loud is it? What type of music is going on? What's the access like between tables? What's the art on the wall? You know, does this fit what you want? And I think that's important to note. And Pier W is just doing it all right. The service was friendly and attentive, which is getting tougher and tougher to find, I think, because of the number of restaurants and breweries and brew pubs popping up in the area. But, you know, there's a reason, as I said, that this restaurant has been around since 1965, and hats off to them. They're doing a fantastic, consistent job.
View Seafood Service, haven't been there in a while, but sounds like the consistency continues from your review. Might be a place to check out over the holidays. I'm sure it's decorated beautifully there at Winton Place Lakewood at
12700 Lake Avenue, Pier W. Mark's review at cleveland.com. Lunch, by the way, they're open. Dinner as well. And probably I would suggest a reservation, I would think. Right, Mark?
Absolutely. We were there for both lunch and dinner, and lunch filled up pretty quickly. So I definitely would suggest reservations.
Mark Bona, Cleveland Plain Dealer, cleveland.com. Follow him on Twitter, mbona30. His review of Pier W. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Bill.
On the 51A, B, or the 51C this morning, RTA part of your morning or a part of your week. The guy that's responsible for your ride, the CEO, Joe Calabrese, on the hotline this morning on WTAM 1100. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Bill.
A couple things I want to ask about. First, a new look to some of the RTA this morning. Big partnership with Metro being announced. Tell me about this.
Absolutely. Today we are launching the Metro Healthline following the very successful launch 9 years ago of the Healthline and 3 years ago of the Cleveland State Line. You know, we're really inputting a BRT system down West 25th Street, combining the best of both bus and rail. The service will be faster, more convenient, and more first class, with over 200 trips per day between downtown and this growing area of the county.
Full disclosure, I'm a MetroHealth patient. I love what they're doing. I love the different satellites they've been building, and they've got some big plans for base, if you will, Metro Hospital that we all see on the curve. The routes that you have chosen here for this promotion that I see, this is truly connecting a lot of people, Joe.
Well, it's connecting downtown with the new campus, and also connecting the new campus with five other Metro Health complexes, and certainly everything in between. Very, very important. It's going to hopefully, as the Healthline did, spur some more economic development, making that whole area of West 25th Street and South a better place to live and a better place to work, and have that connectivity to major, major functions.
Let's go back 9 years when we unveiled the Healthline on Euclid?
It was 9 years ago, about 2 weeks ago when we unveiled it. Next year will be the 10th anniversary. And on December 14th, 2014, we inaugurated the Cleveland State Line. So every 3 or 4 years, we're looking at ways to really, really improve the quality of our service to our customers. And from RTA's perspective, do it at a reasonable cost.
As the city continues to move and evolve, and we see what's been happening with downtown, transportation, that connectivity is so important, isn't it, Joe?
Absolutely. Again, downtown is growing. I know you were at the DCA annual function about a month ago. You know, tremendous growth, tremendous inflow of new people. And West 25th is seeing it as well. So, again, this will provide that great connectivity there. And all the way down to Old Brooklyn and Parma Health Center, Strongsville, Brecksville. This is a very long route, but all connected through the spine of West 25th Street, through the new campus, and into downtown.
And 24/7 service on this, right?
Absolutely.
Wow.
This will be our second highest ridership route, bus route, after the Healthline.
Joe Calabrese heads up our RTA. Last time you and I were together, funding, I know, budget's always a concern. You we're taking a pretty good cut from the state, aren't we?
Well, the state did act or did not act that could cost RTA $20 million a year of local money. So we worked with our local legislators, very, very supportive. We got a bill introduced into the budget bill to provide a fix for that $20 million loss. The governor vetoed that provision. The House overrode the veto 87-10 very substantially. And we're still waiting for the Senate to act. If they don't act by the end of the year, which is coming close, we could lose that $20 million a year, which would be devastating. We certainly, you know, could not absorb a loss of that type. It would affect critical service to our customers.
Critical service and maybe what I pay?
Well, what you pay, certainly. Equally as important, many people don't like to pay more, but I'll pay more if I can get to work or get to school. The real, you know, downside is not being able to get to work or get to school at any price.
Joe Calabrese heads up the RTA as thousands are on it today. And again, Metro Health with the naming rights to some 51 family route buses that you'll be seeing starting today, with an investment and the connectivity, if you will, with what Metro Health is doing. Good stuff. Hey, Joe, if I don't see you before, Merry Christmas. All the best, bud.
Same to you and the team. Thanks much, Bill.
The Browns, Cleveland's Morning News with Wills and Snyder. This is Bill Wills, Mike Snyder alongside every Thursday. Dave Woolabaugh checks in, former Browns lineman, a veteran of veterans. When it comes to the National Football League, 9 seasons with the NFL, of course, Browns included. Dave, good morning, pal.
Warren, how are you today?
Good, buddy. Let me get into the hits and the talk. Even if you didn't see the Bengals and Steelers the other night, any sports center, any two people talking on TV, it's been about the hits and the fines and all that sort of thing. Dave, is this getting out of hand in the hitting or out of hand in the refereeing and in the managing of what this game's about?
Well, I think, you know, it depends on what side of the fence. If you're one of the players delivering those hits, you think it's getting out of control because they're like, why are we getting fined to do what's expected of us? But at the same time, if you go back to what, you know, is going on in the league and how we're trying to protect players and extend their careers and make sure they don't have health issues down the road, and beyond that, we're integrating that into the collective bargaining agreement, saying, hey, listen, we're not going to have contact during training camp. We're not going to have 2 days. We're really going to streamline this. It's really a conflict of interest because at the same time, these guys are trying to blow up. They're not really making sound plays or big hits. They're going headhunting in a lot of these cases, and they're sacrificing technique and form for it. So I think the league is right. They need to protect the players. They need to and the referees, the umpires. I mean, all they're just simply following out the mandate that is dictated to them by the league through the collective bargaining agreement and the coaching committees.
Dave, I think there have always been headhunters in football, but here's some of the defensive players say, in fact, we were playing some cuts from the Steelers, Mike Mitchell. He was saying about, you know, the throw, he went for the guy, he actually went for the midsection, but the receiver altered his direction because he was trying to catch the pass, and that's why he hit him in the head. I don't know, do you buy that? Is that just an excuse, or do you hear what they're saying?
No, you know, I like those plays. I think what you got to look at, and I heard him. I heard his rant, and I think actually I appreciated what he said because, you know, if he's saying, hey, I'm a ball player and I'm making a play on a pass, and if that quarterback throws a bad pass and makes that guy lay out for it or extend for it, then, you know, why should I be fined for that? But at the same time, I mean, you have to have body control. You have to execute properly. I think the problem is. Is if you're a repeat offender, your fine is going to escalate quickly. And they know who repeat offenders are because the same way players scout personnel, the league scouts personnel, they know who the guys are. They know who the guys who are continually having the same issues and maybe not correcting those things. So then it's an issue. But at the same time, I mean, I remember when I was playing, I got fined for an illegal chop block. And it was the only time I got fined like that when I was playing. But I appealed it to the league, and they're like, it's a textbook chop block. But the reality was I sucked it up. I paid my fine because it wasn't like it happened week after week after week after week. You know, these guys, they have to modify their game. The same with anything else. If the game is requiring them to evolve their technique and how they play, you know, maybe they can't launch themselves. Maybe they have to go back to an old school type of tackling that has them break down, chop their feet, you know, wrap up. And maybe it's not a big sports center top 10 hit, but it's an effective tackle.
And at the end of the day, they really are trying to protect the players. Dave, we haven't talked with you about the Browns. We delay that. Still looking for win number one. Your thoughts on what you saw last week against the Chargers and Josh Gordon's return?
You know, I thought Josh was, for a guy who hasn't played, you know, in the time period he did, I thought that he's a phenomenal athlete. He's a little bit of a freak. I don't think too many people can take that kind of time off and come back and be in the shape. And, you know, I think that it's encouraging to say, hey, we have the ability to retain a guy like that. And because of our depth chart really stinks right now, the fact that a guy with that kind of baggage could come in, that's a little bit of hope for us. But I think hopefully Josh got the message, and hopefully Josh will continue to get better because he's been out for a long period of time. So he's got to go back through that learning curve, and he's going to get better every week after week after week. The challenge for him is going to be to feel that pressure, to feel that challenge, and to keep his nose clean, because not only does he have to prove it on the field, he's got to prove it off the field. A lot of people are watching him.
Good take. Former Browns lineman Dave Wohlleben, Bernie Kosar this time tomorrow morning. Dave, thanks much. Have a great day.
Thanks, guys.
Coverage on News Radio, WTAM 1100. Bill Wills, Mike Snyder alongside. John Michael called it last night with the 101-95 win. Our morning Cavs update brought to you by Levin Furniture, the preferred home furniture mattress supplier to the Cleveland Cavaliers. 13th win in a row last night, John.
Yeah, something special. They're rolling right along, and it wasn't the prettiest of games against Sacramento, but in the end, the four-time All-Star was there. LeBron James with the put the game away with a deep three, 32 points on the evening, fell only one assist shy of yet another triple-double. He's just been incredible, throwing three steals, two blocks. To me, the most amazing stat is that now, over the last 12 games, LeBron James has shot 50% or better from the field. And we're talking about a guy who's shooting the mid-range shot from distance. Last night, he was 5 of 8, 13 now in a row. That equals a franchise record. And tomorrow, the Cavs will play in the Hoosier State. They take on the Pacers and looking to break the all-time record.
Well, John, you look at LeBron and his numbers. It's stunning. If you look at the top percentage shooters in the league, he's the only guy, I think, like among the top 20 that doesn't just rely on getting dunks or going inside.
Mike, you're exactly right. He's seventh right now in field goal percentage. I actually looked at that last night, at the six guys up in front of him. First of all are centers, and their percentage in terms of taking shots around the rim, it starts with DeAndre Jordan, who takes 98% of his shots at the rim. Most of those guys up in there anywhere from 80 to 90%. LeBron, only 50% of his shots come around the rim, which really is startling when you think about the numbers in terms of his field goal percentage, which is sensational. And by the way, we're talking about a guy who's third in the league in scoring and third in the league in assists. Not among forwards, not among guys 6'8 or shorter in the league. I mean, among everybody. So it's just been incredible to watch. Player of the month last month for the 35th time. And when you think about that, he now has been reigning player of the month for nearly three full calendar years. So, I mean, we're watching greatness. We're watching something incredible, not just individually out of LeBron, but out of this team right now as they've rattled off 13 in a row, you know, following that pedestrian 5-7 start. So this is the earliest, Mike, since LeBron's return where the team has really gelled. I mean, it's usually taken a while into February, into March before they get things clicking. I mean, this happened in November and here in early December. So great to see, you know, this team's just cruising right along, beating teams that they're supposed to beat, and off they go to Indiana looking to set the record.
And, of course, the bench, one of the stories, Jeff Green, night after night, he's just there every night. Kyle Korver getting it going last night, Wade orchestrating it. It is really something to watch when that bench bunch is out there, isn't it?
To me, that's the entire key, Mike. You know, in Green last night, 17 points. The guy only took 8 shots from the field. 6 of 8 in the ball game. Korver does his thing. I thought the three threes that he hit in the beginning of the fourth quarter really set the tone. I mean, it was a Sacramento Kings team playing above their head. They had the lead after three quarters, feeling pretty good about themselves, and then the three quick threes by Korver, and they're not feeling that good anymore. When you look at this winning streak, Mike, and we're talking about plus-minus numbers, that means, you know, the amount the Cavs score when this player's on the floor versus the amount they surrender when that player's on the floor. Through these 13 games, number one in that department for the Cavs is Kyle Korver. The Cavs have scored 152 more points with Korver on the floor during these 13 games than the opposition. Number two, Dwayne Wade, plus 121, and LeBron rounds out the top three at plus 109. So the bench has been critical. We knew it was the deepest bench that this team, frankly, has ever had, and it comes to fruition early, and, man, they've been great. The primary foursome, it's been Jeff Green, Kyle Korver, Dwayne Wade, and Channing Frye.
13 done, going for 14 tomorrow night in Indiana with the Pacers. John Michael will call it. 7 o'clock will be the tip on News Radio WTAM 1100, home of the Cavaliers, 101.95 win last night. John, thanks much.
Thanks, guys.